Taste of Country Nights on Demand with Evan Paul. On this episode, our interview with Keith Urban, who just dropped his new album, Flow State. Also, we have Tyler Braden, a brand new country artist, after that. And then following that, a throwback to 2023, my interview with Darius Rucker, all on this episode. And then at the end, we'll talk about the week in country music. Thanks for checking out Taste of Country Nights on Demand.
Evan.
What's up, brother?
How are you, man?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Where are you?
I'm at a beach house in Florida on vacation.
Nice. Nice.
Okay. Did Flow State start as like a fun project? And if so, when did it become serious?
It never became serious, thank goodness. It was it would absolutely started as a fun project and just stayed that way the whole time. None of this was preconceived. It was never strategized. I never in a million years thought I'd end up with making a yacht rock record. That wasn't in my sights. I bought a studio in Nashville, and it took about 9 months to get it up and running and working really, really well. By the time it was ready to hit record, I was about to hit the road on the High and Alive World Tour, and I was so frustrated because I went, I want to record something in my studio before I'm, you know. And so we put a session band together, and I said, let's just do a couple of yacht rock songs just for fun. And that's all it was going to be. It was just to break in the studio, and everybody had such a great time doing it that we did a couple more when I came back off the road from touring. And they just kept coming. We just recorded another one and then another one and then two more. And it just kept growing and growing. So across maybe 4 months or so, this album started to reveal itself. It wanted to get made. I just needed to keep up with it. So I was following it the whole way, if that makes any sense.
It does. Were there a few songs that almost made it but didn't that you cut? Like, are there versions of yacht rock songs floating around that aren't on the album by Keith Urban?
No, there's only one song that we cut that isn't on the record because it's a duet, and I didn't find the right duet partner in time for the record to come out. So that's sitting around waiting. That's the only track. But everything else we recorded and moved on. I mean, like I said, I didn't think there was anything serious about the record. It was a fun record to make. We had a blast in the studio. I've never seen session players beaming so much playing songs like my session players were on the floor in the studio. It was incredible.
What was it like having John Mayer in the studio? Because two of you guys are like both guitar legends, current and future. How was that?
Thank you. sadly, I didn't get to be in the space with John, and I look forward to the chance that we get to do that. But I'd actually recorded Guitar Man, and we had also done Magnet and Steel with Little Big Town, and I thought, man, Guitar Man would be a great track to do with John. I mean, a no-brainer, right? So I sent him the song and I said, I've already recorded this, but maybe we could do a version with you singing and playing on it. And he said, oh, I love this. And he said, I can probably do some little backing vocals and bits and pieces, but yeah, let me play as well. So I just sent him what I'd already done, and he weaved in and out of the playing and did an amazing job.
Which one of these are you most excited to play live because it'll show fans a different version of you that they've never seen before?
Any of them, honestly. I mean, it's making this record was in a lot of ways not that different from making an original record for me where I'm recording a song I didn't write. So, you know, something like Blue Ain't Your Color, I didn't write that. You'll Think of Me, I didn't write that. I just recorded a whole song of albums I didn't write again, you know? And so there was something more familiar about making music that I didn't write, but really, really loved the songs, which was also the criteria for choosing every song on this record. I didn't choose any songs because I thought, you know, oh, that's a yacht rock classic or people will really love this one. Every song was chosen because it felt like a good fit for me vocally, you know.
And did you discover anything about your own voice while making this that took you out of your vocal range or anything that you've never done before?
Maybe more how these songs have actually been more of an influence on my music than I realized. I think, you know, the kind of music I've made over the years is obviously a fusion of country and other things. And it's always been sort of easy to just say, well, it's a fusion of country and pop, and there's some bits of R&B here and there, and there's bits of this and bits of that. But I actually think there's way more of this yacht rock type stuff in my music anyway. You know, songs like Kiss a Girl, Until Summer Comes Around, A Sweet Thing. A lot of those songs, they're connected to a lot of the melodic structure of a lot of these songs. So I think they sounded very organic right out of the gate because of they're already in my music to begin with.
Which one took the longest to get right?
You're the second person that's asked that. That's crazy. I can't remember. Some of them took way longer than I thought. Maybe there's a song called Help Is On Its Way, which is a Little River Band song that's got a stack of harmony guitar parts, which took a while to figure out. And then there's an Ambrosia song called How Much I Feel that has so many intricate backing vocal stacked parts weaving in and out of verses. And Josh Reedy from Thomas Rhett's band did most of the backing vocals with me. So Josh Reedy and I did most of the vocals, and we were trying to replicate all those backing vocal parts honoring the original, and they're very complex. They're really, really complex. And I think one of those things, I think maybe doing one verse took like 6 hours to do the backing vocals, oohs and ahs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's crazy.
Yeah.
One more here, man. You mentioned there's a leftover song. Do you think there will be a part two to this?
I never thought there'd be a part one, so you're probably asking the wrong guy. I mean, I have no idea. I didn't expect this. I don't know. I don't really have a plan with what I'm doing next. I think being spontaneous and having fun in the studio is how this record got born. And I'm up for doing more of that, whatever that looks like and sounds like.
Dude, we put on the whole record jamming out here at the Beach House, man, on the Bluetooth.
Awesome.
It works.
Let me try. You're in the perfect environment for that, man. That's awesome.
You sound great, man. You did it, man. You did it.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Go jump in the water, dude. For me. Go jumping for me.
I will, man. Thank you.
Good to see you, Evan. See you, bro.
All right, bye.
All right, next on this episode of Taste of Country Nights on Demand, my interview with country newcomer Tyler Braden. He's got a lot of interesting things going on. Hang on, we're going to do a throwback interview with Darius Rucker after. We're hanging out here with Tyler Braden. My Americana, by the way, amazing.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
What's some feedback you've been getting about
man,
that?
Man, it's actually been really cool. This is probably the most excited for a song I've been in a while, and the feedback we're getting is, I mean, every song is good. You know, people are nice. They love every song kind of thing. But My Americana has gotten just a special type of feedback, I think. Just people, you know, being nostalgic about it, and just people that you don't hear from all the time. Like in the industry, you're getting people texting, calling, hey, I love this song. And you don't get that a lot. So, I mean, that's got to be a good sign.
Who's texting you?
I mean, like the head of labels, the head of other, like, publishers, you know.
Other labels?
Yeah. Like, just random people, like, stuff you don't get super often.
That's like talking to another girl, man.
Yeah. This isn't going out, right?
Where were you when you found out you were being named to the 2026 Opry Next Stage class?
I was standing in my living room at my old house. We moved in December, but last year near the end of the year, my management called me and they're like, hey, they asked if Marissa, my wife, was around, and they were like, put us on speakerphone, and they told us, and I can just still hear Marissa going, ah! That kind of thing, you know, and we were super excited. You know, we've obviously, I mean, obviously we're a fan of the Opry just in general.
Sure.
And just getting to be a part of that. And they've been so great to us, letting us, we've probably played 15 plus times now over the years.
Wow.
And so we've watched this class the last couple of years, and it's amazing to be a part of it.
What's your favorite Opry dressing room?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. And we've gotten to use a lot of them.
I figured, yeah.
I forget, like, the individual names to them, but there's one that we didn't know was a thing until not too long ago, because you think you've seen them all until you, like, go down a hallway. There's one that's, like, hidden in the back, and it's two rooms across from each other, and they're off the main hallway, like, kind of hidden.
Okay.
And that's kind of nice. You get tucked back in there.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
What's the theme of that one?
I don't – man, don't make me lie. I'm not sure.
That's okay.
I don't remember.
That's okay. I want to talk about God's Guns N' Roses. Have you ever, I know the song obviously isn't about Guns N' Roses, but have you ever gotten to meet anyone from Guns N' Roses?
I haven't. Man, I'll be 100% honest with you. That song has gotten me into some trouble because we'll do some interviews. I've done interviews and people go deep cut questions on Guns N' Roses thinking I'm going to know all this stuff. And I have to be like, man, it just worked out, you know. But the story is about, you know, the meet cute story of the couple, you know. But, you know, a lot of people connect over certain bands, certain songs. And Guns N' Roses was the example we used in this song. And so, but it's cool. Like, it pulls in a different kind of crowd. People listen to the song because they see Guns N' Roses in the title, and you just make new fans that way. But it has put me in some spots.
Well, I'll just ask you about Sweet Child of Mine. Can you rip that on guitar?
I learned it a long time ago. I used to work at Guitar Center, and that was one of, like, the no-go songs, like, because you heard it all day. Was sitting there learning it, you know, that and what would it be, like Last Dance for Mary Jane kind of thing. Uh-huh. Like these little songs you hear all the time. Back in Black, you heard. So we'd go turn somebody's amp off. They're like, ding, ding, you know. Like, but that was one of them, though.
That's funny. As a former firefighter, what's something you would say success has ruined for you?
Oh, what is it ruined for me?
Like, what's different from being a normal dude and as a firefighter that you just can't do anymore?
We haven't really reached this crazy point where we, like, can't go to Walmart or nothing.
Okay.
You know, I'm not quite on that level. You know, obviously, there's sides where it would be cool to be that, but it is nice to just still be able to go. You know, people see you, and I think I'm reached a point where I'm recognizable, but nobody's freaking out, screaming, and crying when they see me.
Right, okay.
So, which is good middle ground to be in.
Like, you know? Are people coming up to you every once in a while?
Every once in a while.
Okay. Yeah,
again, not super
like
often.
Like when you're in town to play a show type thing?
Especially when we're in town to play a show, it happens a lot. And, you know, that's cool. It does take away a little bit from being able to just park at the venue and then walk down the street to eat, you know, because you go down the street to eat somewhere and half the people in there are eating there waiting on the show. And but people are nice, man. You know, 99% of people will be like, there he is. That's him right there.
Yeah.
And they kind of
cool,
move on from
man.
There. But yeah, it's cool, man. Nothing's ruined.
Have you had to crank up your firefighter skills since you retired? Like, have you been in a situation?
A few weeks ago, one of our guys was trying to fix something on the bus, and he cut his finger open pretty bad.
Oh.
And he bled a lot, like dripping all over the floor of this venue and everything. And we found, luckily, I was like, there's a kitchen here. They're going to have some sort of med kit. And we're like, we'll get a finger condom on you. But I had to glue him up. But that was about the most I've had to do. But it was funny. It's hard to explain this on the radio, but like there's a certain just muscle memory way to put on gloves and then take gloves off.
Okay.
Because you'll take one glove off and you get all that glove and all the trash. So say you take your right glove off, you got your right glove and all the trash, like bandage wrappers and stuff in the left. And then you take the left glove inside out and it makes a little bag. And just still comes so natural, just little things like that.
Awesome.
And so I was laughing at it when I did it. And we're backstage at this venue and I'm like, I haven't done that forever. And I just, without even thinking about it.
It's just like riding a bike, man, right?
Yeah, it's weird.
Our show's like Nashville 911, is the continuity right on that?
I've never seen them, man.
Okay.
I saw a couple scenes of what was the thing that got that whole thing started again. What, Chicago FD or Chicago Fire?
Yeah, those kind of shows.
There's some pretty wild stuff. I don't know. There's a scene in one of them I saw where the guy falls through a hole in the floor into the basement, and they stretch a hose across that hole, and then from each side they push the ends in so the hose like droops through the hole, and then he stands on the hose and they pull from each end and it levels that hose back out. Again, this is hard to explain, but levels that hose back out.
Got it.
You know, and he's standing on it and then they get them over the edge. And it's like, on paper, I had heard, like, that is a thing to where maybe you try to, but to see it happen is ridiculous.
That's funny. That's funny. Who in country music, because you've been on a lot of, played a lot of shows, met a lot of country music artists, who has given you a compliment that you've never forgotten?
Man, I think one of the coolest things that's ever been done by like a headliner that I hadn't even really talked to much at the time anyways, Brantley Gilbert years ago were playing for him. It's like our first show back from COVID, I think. We're in Guilford, New Hampshire, and we're in the middle of our set, and Brantley comes out on the stage, and because nobody there knows me from Adam kind of thing, you know, and he comes up to the mic and just yells at the crowd, like, y'all need to listen to this man here. He's going places. Like, just like really cool of him, you know, and just because a lot of artists, you know, you got to keep the mystery. You kind of hide until you reveal yourself at the beginning of your show. But he didn't care. He came walk. So I've done that for people opening for me and stuff since then, because that was really cool. But I'll tell you one that was funny. Luke Bryan, our first show with him, he walked by my dressing room and he poked his head in. He said, man, great show. I didn't see or hear any of it. And, he was so proud of himself. He told people all day that he said that to me. He was proud of that quote, man. He's great.
That's awesome. Oh, my gosh. Who is, on the contrary, giving you some great advice?
You get a lot of little, you know, acorns all over the place. I think, I don't even remember the first place I heard this, but just the best advice I've ever gotten and the best advice I can give is just networking. Like, because I'm a homebody and it's hard, you know, sometimes, especially when you're out on the road and stuff, you want to come home to stay at home. But I mean, just getting out there, especially for somebody new, just networking and also just taking everything in, just going as slow as you can. My wife journals a lot, and I really wish that I did too, because there's things like the Brantley Gilbert moment or the Luke Bryan moment. Like, I'll always remember those, but I'm sure there are things that I don't remember that I wish that I could. And it would spark more stories when you ask that. I'd remember more, and I think that's a great thing to do, is just trying to, you know, document things.
What's it like? I saw you played C2C, a couple of them overseas. What's that like playing for, like, what do you say in between songs?
Well, we played in Germany, and I had some people telling me, like, it's a little interesting because you get there and they're singing all your songs to you, but English isn't their first language.
Right.
And they still know these songs. And so my go-to joke when I was there was like, I hope, you know, I feel bad for the ones that don't actually speak English, because you're going to miss out on how funny and charming I am between songs. But I mean, the crowds over there are amazing. Just, you know, it's not oversaturated country concert, so they're just ready for it. And we just announced our first headlining tour over there coming next February. So, I mean, it's exciting.
Wow. When's the next time you're going to play the Opry? And then do you know anything about that?
We're playing Category 10 for Opry Next Stage event, like with CMA Fest, like during CMA Fest. And that's might be tonight. It's crazy week, man. I've got my days all mixed up.
You got a lot going on this week.
But I'm not sure our next Opry, actual Opry performance, but it's every couple months pretty much this year being Opry. So it'll be this summer for sure.
You just get to roll into the artist entrance.
pretty much, yeah.
You bring your whole family?
Sometimes, you know, they live four and a half hours away, and I've made the mistake of, like, playing the Opry, and, like, I'll be post that I'm playing the Opry tonight, and my mom will be like, you didn't tell me you're playing the Opry.
Oh,
like, I'm sorry. Yeah, but they definitely, I mean, they've come multiple times. We've had some really cool Opry. They obviously came to my debut. They came up when I got my very first, my first plaque when Devil You Know went gold. They surprised me backstage, and the whole family was there to see that and have that moment. So we've had some really cool Opry moments with the family.
That's awesome. And finally, man, what's going on for you? Like, look, moving forward music wise.
We've got a lot of singles planned this year. A lot of songs coming out. Our first one's here in just a few weeks. We'll announce that officially possibly this week, but, it's exciting. The plan is an album next year, but this year we're just kind of taking it one song at a time. But I'm really excited about the direction we're heading.
You got a lot of shows coming up this year?
Yeah, man. We headlined for the first half of the year. We did our Devil in a Prayer tour, and that was an amazing tour. We got a lot of fairs and festivals, you know, this summer. We're going to Australia for our first headlining tour in Australia in October.
Wow.
So it's a big year.
That's awesome, dude. Well, we appreciate you stopping by, man.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
All right, we'll get into the bonus throwback interview here we have lined up for you on Taste of Country Nights on Demand. This is my interview I had with Darius Rucker back in 2023. Let's throw back. Evan Paul here with Taste of Country Nights. I'm going to try to interview you as not a super fan, because I am a super, super fan.
Thanks, man.
Darius Rucker's in the house. What's up, man?
Hey, man. Evan, how you doing?
Good, man. I'm great. Good to see you. The game yesterday, Saturday, my brother is a Gamecock. He went there.
So, smart guy in your family. Good.
Yes. So, I texted him because they were up for a minute, and I was like, is this going to happen? How do you feel about the – it was close.
It was – I'm happy with the way we played. You know, the first half we played great, and then the second half – you know, Georgia did exactly what I would have done. They said, we don't care about your running game. We're just going to play the pass, and we just couldn't get anything done. But I we're the Jeffersons, man. Our program's moving on up. I'm happy with it.
Will you put money on teams you love, or do you gamble? Or what?
I do gamble, but I never bet on the teams that I love. I don't bet on those games at all, because I got enough already invested in those games. If we'd lose the game and I was to lose money, I don't think I could handle it.
Okay, yeah. So you refuse, even if it's like a guaranteed bet.
Well, not bet. A Gamecock or a Dolphin game at all.
What's, not in terms of dollar amount, but in terms of you thought that they were going to win, what was the craziest one you thought you were going to win until the last minute, a bet?
Oh, goodness, there's a lot of crazy ones. Yesterday in the Rams game, the Rams are down 10. San Francisco -7, and they kick a field goal. The Rams kick a field goal with time expiring to cover. I'm like, what is that? What is that? I was so mad. I wanted to kill somebody.
So do you watch Red Zone?
I do watch the Red Zone channel. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Do you get stressed out?
Yeah, because I got like 7 fantasy leagues.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're watching the Red Zone, you know, and I got 2 TVs and I'm watching the Red Zone and the Dolphin game. And yeah, but, you know, I live for football, man. It's my favorite thing in the world.
Let's talk about Tua. Tua, man, he's looking good.
If he stays healthy, he's going to win the MVP and the Dolphins are going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Yes.
This could be the year.
This could be the year. I've been saying that since 72, but this could be the year.
No, I know. I saw Marino at the game recently. I still feel bad for Marino. He deserved a ring, man.
Dude, you know, he was playing in the Bills era. The Bills will go to those 4 Super Bowls in a row, and he was also playing in that era that before big free agency, where you really tried to build through the draft. So it was tough. The Dolphins were always good but not great, and then they stopped. You know, they weren't getting a running game because they were like, why get a running game when you got Dan Marino? Well, you get a running game to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, but it was tough. I feel bad for him, because if he had won 1 Super Bowl, I don't think the question of who the greatest quarterback was wouldn't even be a question.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, he still had a great career.
I messed with Vinny Testaverde back in the day.
Oh, my goodness.
Dude, University of Miami, Vinny Testaverde.
Absolutely.
He kind of flopped in the NFL, but I thought he was going to make it.
Heisman winner, man.
Yeah, he was a
absolutely
big time. The album's called Carolyn's Boy. What's the song on the album that your mom would have loved the most?
Oh, Old Church Hymn. Old Church Hymn is the song she would have been most loved. I did that song with Chapel Heart, and it was funny because I had never heard of them. And I'm looking on, just going through Twitter, and I see these 3 black chicks singing country music. So I turn it up, and they blew my mind.
Dude, they're hilarious.
They blew my mind. They're so great to hang out with. And it was funny because I texted them right after I saw it, because we had just finished Old Church Hymn, and we didn't know what we were going to do with the backgrounds. And I texted them, you know, split them in the DMs, you know, you guys want to be on my record? And they were like, who is this? This is a Darius Rucker. We don't want to be on.
So you make moves through Instagram.
Yeah, through Instagram to get them on. And they came on and just killed it. I'm such a big fan. And that's a song my mom would love the most.
Okay. What is there one on the album that was almost too personal that you almost didn't put on?
Yeah, it's a song called Never Been Over that I wrote with John Osborne and Lee Miller. And that was that's a pretty personal song. I almost didn't put that on.
Was that like the first time you ever talked about that stuff?
Yeah, that was the first time I wrote a song about it. And it was really, that was a tough song to write. It's a tough song to sing. It's still, I love it.
Are you going to sing it live?
Yeah, I think it's one of the songs I want to do. It's just such a beautiful little song that I want to sing it live.
So when you put out a song like that, do you send it to your ex first?
No, you just put it out. you just put it out.
Okay.
And wait for the phone call.
Okay. What about the kids?
They hear everything because they're always around and I'm playing it all the time. And
yeah.
Daddy's at that point where, Dad, yeah, we love your music, but we don't want to really listen to it. So they're good.
They've already checked out.
Yeah, they've already checked out on Dad.
Let's go back to like the 90s. Do any of your rock contemporaries call you up after seeing the success you had crossing over the country and say like, hey, is there any room for me?
I've had some people, I'm not going to say any names, but I've had some people ask me about it. And, I've actually told them, if it's not real, don't do it because it's not going to work. And I remember I saw an interview with Steven Tyler, who's a friend, and when he came over to Nashville for a minute and they asked him why, he said, well, I saw Terry's a success. I thought, I could do it, but, I'm a Southern boy who loves country music since from the time I was a kid. This wasn't a joke to me. It wasn't me trying. I just wanted to make country music, and so it worked for me. But I tell anybody to ask me that it's probably not going to work. They don't play over here.
Right. If you have to ask, I thought maybe John Popper could have made it just with his
Popper,
sound.
Yeah, I love Popper. Yeah, with his sound and the harmonica, I think he could have had a shot. Yeah, I love that guy.
Who were some '90s bands that you had fun like? Too much fun with?
Ooh, Toad the Wet Sprocket. We had way too much fun. I can tell some stories about that. Toad the Wet Sprocket, we had a lot of fun with. Bare Naked Ladies, we had a lot of fun with. We have a lot of fun with, Sister Hazel.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I loved all those songs.
But back in the day, it was Evan McCain, who is my brother. We've had way too much fun. So much fun, he had to stop having fun. But, back in the day, it was crazy. We had a great time.
I got beef with Evan McCain because I tried to, not beef, I tried to hire him to sing at my wedding. So I looked into it. That was as far as I got. They were like $40,000 just for us to even look at it. And I was like, what? And this was not too long ago.
Yeah, it's hard to get people to pay what. You know what my wedding price is?
I don't know. What is it?
$1 million. But I'll be the best wedding band you ever had. I will kill it. You can even name 5 songs we'll learn, but it's me.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And do people take you up on it?
Twice.
Okay. And what did you have to, what did you do?
We played our butts off. We were great. I sang it the way I sang the wedding song, and then we go play the show.
What's the protocol, though, with that? Are you like, they can put pictures, videos out? You don't care?
You write that. You can do whatever you want to do. Whatever you want to do.
Did you have fun?
Yes, it was fun. Because, I sang at the wedding, and then they had a little party before we played. So by the time we got on stage, everybody was drunk. It was awesome. Yeah.
What do you miss most about the 90s?
Oh, the thing I miss the most about the 90s is the early. I miss when Hootie and the Blowfish, when we were playing clubs, and it was the 4 of us against the world. And you go, and the first time you play that club is 10 people. Then the 5th time you play that club, you're selling out. Those were the days. I missed that so much. It was so much fun.
And now people go to clubs and karaoke your stuff.
I know.
I think I can do Darius Rucker better than Darius Rucker.
Oh, I want to hear that.
Okay. She sits alone by lamppost, trying to find a thought that's escaped mine.
So you really think that's better than me?
Yeah.
I must suck.
Can we try it? Let's do it at the same time.
All right. She's alone by lamppost, trying to find a thought that's escaped her mind.
Yo, she says, Dad's the one I love the most.
You're awful.
But stop's not fun.
I mean, you're making me sound bad. You're so bad.
I hear you. Oh, man. Your new album, Carolyn's Boy, obviously was named after your late mother. Do you miss her different in 2023 than you did, say, a year after she died in 1993?
Yeah. I still miss her a lot. I still think about her all the time.
Okay.
And I miss her a lot, but definitely a lot. Like back in the 90s, missing her was pain and I can't believe my mom's gone. Now it's more I'm missing her, and I'm hoping that I become the man she wanted me to be. It's just a little different, a little more mature now, I think.
What are your mannerisms that you've taken from her, do you think?
When people say I'm a nice guy, that comes straight from my mom. She told me so many times it's so much easier to be nice than to be an a-hole. She said that to me a million times, and I live by that. And the charitable work, straight from my mom. Those are things she taught me as a kid, and I still try to do today.
And did you have a good childhood?
I did. I mean, we grew up, you know, we didn't have much, you know, and we were poor, and there were times when we didn't eat. But it's like I never even thought about that until I grew up. Like, I do my childhood again right now. But it was beautiful. I loved it. We had a nice village. You know, we had a neighborhood that was a village. Everybody was your parent. You know, if I went around to Miss Simmons' house and I acted a fool and she whooped my butt. You know, nowadays you go home and your mom wants to go down and fight. No, not back then. If she whooped my butt when I got home, I got my butt whooped again. She had to whoop my butt. You know, so it was a great childhood. I loved it.
You're heading over to Europe. Started Fires Tour in 2024. Kit Moore was in here. He said he's seen some A-listers in America flop in Europe. What do you think the secret is?
The reason I'm doing so well over there is because I went all the time. Like, when I first came to Nashville, I told my manager I wanted to go every year, or at least every other year, and I do. I go almost every year to Europe and do a tour, and I built such a great following. You know, like this time I'm going, and we were talking today about ticket sales. We're selling every place out to the point to where, like, in London, they want, you know, they were talking about putting me in the O2 Arena next time I go. It's like, we did it the right way. We just went every year, and now we got a fan base, and they love it.
Wow. Are they tough crowds, or do they like different kinds of country music? Do you have to play different songs of yours that you don't play in America?
No, they love everything. And the thing is, they know everything. Like, they listen to the whole record. When you get there, you play some album track and they're singing it like it's a hit. And I love that. And you know, the crowds are amazing. They just, because I think sometimes they think, how many times is he going to come over here? So I'm going to go see it and I'm going to have a blast. And so I love when we play in Europe, I'm the happiest man on the planet.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love it.
And you're playing in Amsterdam, where obviously weed is legal.
Weed is legal everywhere.
Bro. Yeah. It's picking up steam in America. Yeah. Well, how are crowds different, like in a Colorado than like a Tennessee or something?
They're not really different. I mean, sometimes a little more laid back, you know, especially Amsterdam crowds are real laid back. You know, Colorado crowds are real laid back. But, you know, they're all there to hear the music and dance and sing and be there with their friends. So it's pretty much the same.
And then how are your kids doing?
Awesome.
Yeah.
You know, the last one just got out of the house. He's living in New York at NYU. And so they're awesome. You know, two of my two youngest all of a sudden want to be musicians, which I'm so against that.
Why?
Because it's such a hard business. It's such a hard business. And even if you have a little success, you're chasing that forever. You know, so I wanted them to be doctors and lawyers and such, but, you know, we'll see.
Did you do the dad thing of, like, moving them into college?
Oh, yeah.
Like, U-Hauled it, kind of, or?
I didn't do the U-Haul. We sent that stuff because New York is different.
Yeah.
You know, and so we sent that stuff, and the movers moved it in, but, you know, that day I was there with them. And
but you were in the trenches?
Absolutely. Always in the trenches.
Now, do people stop you, like, when you're, like, you know, lifting up a bunk bed? Like, wait a minute.
It's happened.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Oh, you Darius Burke? Yeah. Can I carry this upstairs, please? I can't really shake your hand right now.
You sharpened your acting chops in the video for Fires Don't Start Themselves. Could this be something that you pick up more of?
You know, I feel about the acting thing. If somebody calls me and anytime somebody calls me and asks me to do something, I love doing it. You know, like being on Reba's show last year and stuff like that, I love it. But I'm not an actor, man, you know, so I'll do it. But in that video, I was definitely trying to pull my inner Stabler out and really, you know, act. And I was very proud. If I don't win an Emmy, I just don't know what to do. I mean, life's not fair if I don't win an Emmy.
Like, would you ever do like Yellowstone or something?
In a heartbeat.
Okay.
If Yellowstone called, I would pay my own plane flight and hotel room, and they don't have to pay me, and I would be on that show. I love that show so bad. I love that show.
You heard it here first.
I think I could steal Rip's wife. I think that'd be good.
He's writing himself in.
I'm writing myself already. Taylor, hook me up, Mr. Sheridan. I mean, Mr. Sheridan.
Well, dude, we love the album, man.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Evan, for coming by.
Thank you for having me. This has been fun, Evan.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely.
All right, and joining us to talk about the week in country music news now from tasteofcountry.com, we have the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Billy Dukes.
It was a pretty interesting week, I thought. CMA Fest produced some cool stories. I thought the interaction between Tim McGraw and Lainey Wilson is maybe where we should start.
Okay. Do you want to catch people up on it?
Sure.
You want me to? Or
Go ahead. So some years ago, 15, 20 years ago, teenage Lainey Wilson wrote Tim McGraw a letter, a fan letter. They're both from Louisiana. In fact, Lainey's hometown of Baskin is like 30 miles away from where Tim McGraw grew up. So Tim was a pretty big influence on her, not just because of the local reasons. She really liked his music. She would create dances to his songs. So she wrote him a fan letter saying, you know, I just need a shot, this and that. Well, you know, I mean, Tim was a really big star in 2010. So the letter just kind of got filed away. He never saw it for one reason or another. And life went on. They finally got a chance to meet at CMA Fest, and Tim had heard about this letter and wrote a letter back to her. He admitted he never saw it, but he wrote a letter back to her as if he had read the letter and shared with her a song that he and Tom Douglas kind of wrote about the whole back and forth experience, and he's going to release that at some point soon.
Wow, yeah, that's incredible, and I love how I feel like because Tim is a father to daughters too, I love the fact that he knew to write it to Lainey as the age she was when she wrote it. Like, now granted, someone in his team might have given him the idea to do that. I don't know. But the fact that, because he could have addressed it in another way. He could have been just, oh, let me write her a letter back apologizing for not getting her letter. But the fact that he went along with it and, you know, spoke to her. Because is the letter out there that he wrote? Because I would love to read that. Like, what did he say? Like, one day you'll be a big star? Like, you know, like, that's fun.
I don't think she shared that letter yet. And we haven't heard the song. But you're right, though. He elevated the situation, which I think is interesting on a number of different levels. Like, okay, so as a skeptic or someone who's really cynical could say, okay, Tim's promoting new music. It doesn't hurt to latch on to the biggest female star in the format right now, yada, yada. But he was still humble enough to kind of do it and to, like, sit down and write, to play along with it, maybe make a song out of it, and you know, who knows where this could kind of go from here. A Tim McGraw duet with Lainey Wilson, I would not be mad about it.
Yeah, I feel like it has to be a duet, right? If it's a song about that, it's got to be a duet.
There's got to be something from them together, I feel like, at some point.
Okay, all right. Now that you've spelled it all out, this kind of sounds to me like a whole setup for a Tim McGraw-Lainey Wilson collaboration.
It might be.
Because how did Tim hear about said letter randomly at this exact time where they met?
Well, so now, in fairness, she talked about it in her documentary on Netflix, which was released in April. So he could have watched that show or heard about it from people who did.
Okay.
But it very well could just be all to promote this duet that's coming, and it's kind of contrived, but I don't think so. I think there's some, like, sincerity both ways, and if the end result is promoting a song, I don't know, I'm okay with it. Like,
yeah,
take advantage of these moments when they're out there, because if you're an artist, both of Tim's stature and Lainey's stature, like, these opportunities to create something that's truly new and memorable, they kind of become harder to grasp, right? Because people are kind of get used to you. So it becomes more difficult to find, like, a new in to that mainstream conversation. So yeah, for sure, take advantage of this. It doesn't mean that her letter wasn't sincere. It doesn't mean that his return letter wasn't sincere. It just means that they're making the most of it.
Here's how I would love to see the song be arranged. And hopefully this happens. First, it's Lainey singing her letter that she wrote to Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second verse is Faith Hill singing to Tim McGraw how he should have answered this letter and why didn't he read it back in the day.
Okay.
And then it's Tim McGraw on the third verse apologizing to Lainey and saying thank you to his wife for pointing out his mistake.
It's been like a decade since we heard Faith Hill sing anything, so I'm for this plan.
Yeah, this is the big comeback, man. This is the reveal. she's the second verse of this trio.
The second thing I want to talk about this week, I don't know if you've realized this year, doesn't it seem like there's been a lot of country artists taking a break from the road, a hiatus for health or mental health reasons?
Yeah, there's been, yes, yeah, yeah. And some have been, people have been questioning, is it because of concert sales low? I don't know.
So a website, Penn Live, did the math, and they added up seven different artists who have formally announced they're taking a break from the road. Most recent was Justin Moore, who wrote on Instagram that he has to address a health issue. He didn't share any further details that, so we won't speculate. But that follows artists like Randall King, Taylor Holder, Megan Patrick, who, give her a break, she's pregnant, right? And she's a little bit older for a pregnant woman, so there could be some serious health risks there. Chase Rice earlier in the year, Coulter Wall. These guys have all kind of either said there was a real health issue, or meaning physical, or a mental health. They needed a break for the road for mental health reasons.
Yeah, I mean, I could totally see that, and there's also been, like what happened with the Post Malone and Jelly Roll first part of the tour where they canceled that. And
great point.
There's things like that where,
yeah,
I don't know, is the go-to like for health issues instead of saying low ticket sales, or is it genuine? I guess the skeptical person will never know,
Well, I mean, so like an artist will never say low ticket sales, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And these days you can actually go on Ticketmaster to see how shows are selling. I remember there was a 90s artist who canceled some shows for reasons beyond his control. And I went online and I found out like, oh yeah, the shows weren't selling. I don't think any of these seven or eight artists are being untruthful in that there's a mental health issue to overcome or a physical health issue. Like, I believe them, but I also don't think we get to seven artists if concert tickets were selling more robust in 2026.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. There's definitely a problem between the gas and the ticket sales and the amount of money it costs, to go to a concert is ridiculous. Like, you're in a grand if you bring the whole family.
I mean, an artist who is like a new artist, right? They can kind of travel in a van. So like there's not as much overhead, it's just maybe a van pulling a trailer. So a dollar per gallon increase in gas, that's important, but it's not like an artist who might have 2, 3, 4 semi trucks that they're also got on the road with them.
Right. Yeah.
So, and you get an artist like, this isn't going to affect like the superstars, right? Like the Luke Combs and the people who are selling out their shows or dang near selling out shows. It hits these sort of middle of the road artists like a Chase Rice and a Justin Moore really hard because they can sell out small arenas, but if they're only 2/3 full on a small arena, then a dollar increase in gas really messes with the margins and they might be fronting some of that money. Like the math is really difficult for some of those mid-tier artists.
Yeah, we almost need to go back to the COVID days where they do virtual concerts.
I don't know if anybody's asking for those again. Did you watch any of those? Did you take in any virtual shows?
I don't think so. Not if I try. I don't know. I've like mentally blocked out those 2 or 3 years. It's weird to me.
I know. It does feel like such a long time ago. But I mean, you got the gas is one thing. The economy is suffering overall. But I think all this sort of like Ticketmaster and Live Nation have been making a lot of negative headlines lately. So yeah, there's maybe like a distrust for like the people that sell tickets. I think that plays a role. Like, it's just hard as an artist right now. So like, if you're tired of touring and you're not selling tickets, man, why not take the ticket off? Give everybody money back, cut your losses, and just round up the horses for 2027.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I think that's what's happening, and it might keep happening too, and rolling into the next year. I guess time will only tell.
Before we go, last year, I think it was last year, maybe it was the year prior, I know you went and you were a guest announcer at the Grand Ole Opry. Did you get to meet Bill Cody during that visit?
I did not. He was not there. He was not there on that night.
Have you ever met him or kind of been in his company?
I have not. No, yeah. I know who he is. I just have never gotten the chance to meet him or talk to him or anything.
Well, just from a radio standpoint, like the pipes on that guy, right? Like his voice. It was like Bob Kingsley-esque. Like those two guys have the best country radio voices, just pure voices that I can think of. But what stands out to me about the tributes to Bill Cody is they are universally, everybody just talks about how nice a guy he was. And there's so many people pouring out tribute. He was clearly just absolutely universally beloved.
Yeah. And
I don't know if that's true for everybody. When someone dies, you often get two dozen tributes that talk about people. It's in the hundreds with Bill Cody. It is clear everybody who was around him just loved being around him. And he celebrated country music new and old. And he was a friend to everybody, made you feel like a friend. So his death, I think, is pretty hard to take in the country community. He was only 67. It seemed like he had some ways to go.
I agree. I saw Reba. Was Reba's the only questionable one that people were questioning because she didn't say she thought he was nice? She just said people thought he was nice.
It was a little less emphatic than some others, but it wasn't. That was people, I think, reading into it, saying maybe Reba didn't know him that well. Don't know how often Reba plays the Opry. It's possible that they didn't know each other terribly well, but hers was fine. It wasn't as emphatic as some others.
I hope they use his recorded voice from time to time, like they do with the Yankees old announcer. He used to be the only one that introduced Derek Jeter after he passed away, things like that. So I hope they still incorporate his voice into the Opry.
I remember going to the Opry. And what's fun about going to the Grand Ole Opry is it's a live radio show. So they do the ad reads live, the host will read them. And not only was he a really good salesman for whatever product he was selling, but as he's doing these ad reads, the artists, especially the classic artists, will kind of come out in front and quietly try to throw Bill Cody off of his game and make him stumble or stutter through an ad read. And he'd be smiling, but he'd never break. He'd get through that ad read as all these hijinks were happening. And
that's
that was
true
really
radio right there. I've been in that situation too. That's true radio, man.
It was just really charming. So RIP Bill Cody. I never met him either. Certainly heard his voice on the radio and watched him perform, but really a beloved figure in country music.
Yeah, he will be missed for sure. And we'll continue to keep you up to date on the tributes as they still pour in days after. Coming up on the next couple of weeks here on Taste of Country Nights on Demand, we have Clint Black will be joining us next week. And then the week after that, we have Chris Young. Chris Young will be in here on Friday night talking to us on Taste of Country Nights on Demand. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast. Leave us a comment, subscribe, all that stuff helps us out here at Taste of Country Nights on Demand.